Lamar breaks that, go block for him. You understand? Don't loaf down the field walking, watching him run. Go block for him. Okay? You drop a ball, fine. Go block for him, please.
Yeah, these backers are going to do this to you. That's what they're going to do. Be ready. They're going to jam your... Be ready to go from the first pitch. You understand? I'm telling you right now. Get your motor going, because it's on now. Right? It's on.
Welcome to Unsquish the Fish, the podcast where bloggers, writers, and Fins fans come to talk everything Miami Dolphins and bask in the glow of aqua and orange. And now, for the host of Unsquish the Fish, Ron Caniff. Fins up. Fins up. Fins up.
Hello, Dolphins fans. Welcome to another episode of Unsquish the Fish, the currently properly named show as of late. There's more going on right now in the last 3 days than has probably gone on with this organization since Bullygate, and that's likely the truth. I have a lot of thoughts and feelings about many of the things that are going on. With me, I have Chris Kay from @FinTroopers out of the UK. How you doing, Chris?
I'm all right, thanks, Ron. I wish I had some better news to report back from London, but after the weekend, everything's gone into a bit of upheaval.
For sure. But you were actually at the game. You were at the pre-parties, the Saturday parties. Why don't you tell us all about that, man, before we get into the fun stuff of the last couple of days?
Well, the game was one thing. The game was a disappointment, but I can definitely happily say that the whole weekend was just... it was incredible. The guys over here at NFL UK put on a great show for everyone. So, like I said last time, Trafalgar Square was where the party was out on Saturday. And there was, over 40,000 people there. It was a show that was sort of co-hosted by OCU Manura was there as well. Sort of doing the presenting with a couple of the guys from TV channels over here.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just what an atmosphere. It was great. They brought out sort of all the current players and ex-players were there. We had a lot of Dolphins alumni there. Joe Rose was there, Mark Clayton, Mark Duper, OJ McDuffie, Nat Moore, Sam Madison, Bob Greasy, and of course, Dan Marino. So, that was all happening on a stage at Trafalgar Square. Everyone got to sort of get involved, hear what they had to say. And that went on for the whole afternoon. So a lot of people just having a lot of fun. Luckily, the sun stayed out for us. It was nice and warm. The sun was shining. Just what a fantastic afternoon that was. So that was great. After that, they'd set up a Dolphins and a Jets bar. So keeping them separate, of course.
Yeah, I think so.
Which was pretty amazing. We went to the bar and we got to hang out with guys. We got to meet with Marino. Got to hang out with Mark Clayton, who's got to be one of the coolest guys I've ever met. I mean, he was just kind of sat there outside the pub on somebody's motorbike, just chatting stories and telling us about his days playing in the NFL. Joe Rose, what a guy to have a chat with. So, hanging out with guys like Sam Madison, Marino, how could it get any better?
Oh, that's awesome. You actually got, like, how close did you get to Dan Marino, if I may ask?
We were stood with him. He stopped for a little bit of a chat and a picture. So we've sent out a picture on our Instagram and Twitter. So he stopped for a quick photo, a quick chat. It was he was off somewhere, but he managed to stop by for a little bit.
I assume somewhere on the other side of town or somewhere nearby, the Jets had their own thing going on. Was like Joe Namath there and stuff like that, or you don't even know about that end of it?
I don't know so much about that. We actually did go in there because we'd left the Trafalgar Square party. We were all dressed up going towards the Dolphins bar, and we thought we'd stop by the Jets bar just to show our faces. And we walked through this bar and everybody was booing us. Like the bar
was awesome.
And absolutely everyone was booing us. So somebody took a video of it, so we'll hopefully be able to upload that onto our Instagram and Twitter as well for just guys to check out. But it, like I say, that Saturday couldn't have been any better really.
Yeah, that sounds like a great time, man. I would have really liked to be there. And make
yeah,
the trip.
Amazing opportunity for UK fans. I mean, when do you, probably in America? I imagine you don't get the opportunity to sort of hang out with Dolphins legends and sort of on a weekly basis. But when they bring it over here, like I was saying last time, they go all out and they really, you know, bring those opportunities to the fans.
Well, they're definitely trying to promote the sport over there. So I'm sure, they were going to try and get everybody who was willing to go and whatever. Maybe there was a couple bucks put in their pocket to do so. I have no idea for sure.
Probably.
But it's awesome. I mean, it's awesome to hang out with them. I'm sure I never have met Clayton. I have never met Marino. I haven't met most of those guys. So that would have been exciting for sure.
Yeah, it's great to just, you know, it's a good opportunity to chat to other fans in the UK. A lot of them, you know, they know about the sport. They're very knowledgeable. Everyone's got their own opinions. I mean, the number of conversations I had about with other Dolphins fans about Tannehill, a lot of it was mixed, but, you know, everybody just was there agreeing what a tough guy he is, taking all these hits. But, you know, the fans do know about NFL. They were sort of really getting into the game, and they were there to support the team, absolutely.
All right, so getting to the game, which we, we're not going to dig into super deep because we all saw what happens, and it was second verse, same as the first when it came to watching the Bills game or the Jets game, pretty much. But you you were there. What were your thoughts? Like, how was it right before the game started, especially for the Finns fans? Like, how was the excitement? How did you feel personally about it?
I was really excited because the day, the build up was incredible. It kind of spilled over from Saturday. Everybody was still really hyped up. They still had a big stage set up on the Saturday, and they brought out, Bob Greasy was there talking and being interviewed, building up the excitement. You could tell that there was genuine sort of hope in the air that the Dolphins could pull out a win. So that started with the whole tailgate started about 9:30 in the morning, getting into the stadium for about 2 o'clock for a bit of a pregame. And when it kicked off, you could see, just introducing the players, they'd filled that stadium with 85,000 Dolphins flags, and everybody was waving them around. And there was genuine excitement and hope that the Dolphins could come out with a win. But, you know, after that first drive stalled, and then they came back, Ryan Fitzpatrick, first play for the Jets, 58-yarder to Marshall over Grimes, it sapped the atmosphere right out of that stadium, unfortunately. You could tell what kind of game it was going to be from there.
Yeah, what was the ratio of Dolphins to Jets fans, if you had to take a guess? Sounds like it was pretty heavily on the Dolphins.
Yeah, I'd say it was probably, because it's a largely mixed fan base, so you've got fans from all 32 teams. But I think for those fans who were there supporting either the Dolphins or the Jets, it was probably sort of 2/3 Dolphins to 1/3 Jets. And then all the neutral fans were sort of largely supporting the home team. So there was a really sort of positive vibe for the Dolphins before the game. And then that quickly went.
Yeah. So when did you really feel like this game was, when did you know this game was just going to be another Miami Dolphin game of 2015? Was it really right after we went 3-and-out and they marched down the field in a couple of plays?
Yeah, after that first Jets touchdown. So I think there was the Chris Ivory 3-yard run in the first quarter, and second quarter there was a 10-yard pass to Decker. Now, by then, it did feel like it was pretty much out of hand and we weren't going to get back. But the Jets definitely shot themselves in the foot with a lot of penalties. They kept us in the game. I think they had 14 penalties for about 463 yards. So, you know, at crucial times, they did manage to keep us in the game. But you've got to look, really, all hope was virtually gone by the second quarter. Now, that came back slightly when we thought we were getting that touchdown to Landry. Yeah,
which they called back and it was very questionable.
But that the end of that fourth quarter was just one of the most miserable quarters of football I've ever seen. And I did have a look at the sort of the game recap, and that we had first and goal at the four. And I was just looking at the game, at the play calling here, because we didn't run the ball once. And I was trying to think, did we actually run the ball at all? And then looking back at it, we threw the ball. We had first and goal, incomplete to Landry. Second and goal, incomplete to Jennings. Third and goal, incomplete to Landry. Fourth and goal, incomplete to Jennings. But then that was when there was a defensive holding penalty on Buster Screen.
Yes.
So then we had first and goal at the two. That was the touchdown to Landry, nullified by penalty. Then it was yeah, first and goal at the 12, pass play, incomplete to Damian Williams, incomplete to Jordan Cameron, incomplete to Landry, and then intercepted by Darrell Revis. That is, it was just some of the most uninspired and miserable play calling I've had to see. But by that point, I think everybody knew it was well and truly over.
Yeah, it's that I couldn't believe what was happening during that. I mean, four tries, and they gave us another four. Gave it to us.
We could have made it still. Up to,
it's like they could have given us 16 tries, and we wouldn't have got it. That's what it felt like.
It wouldn't. I mean, we could have made it then at least 21-27 with sort of 6.5 minutes left, and you know,
the game would have been within hands. You wouldn't have even had to onside kick there.
No, exactly, and the defense, even though it was sort of holding in slightly, you know, the Jets weren't playing a very clean game. They were getting penalties and giving up big yards through those. So it would have just made it a little bit of a closer game. Whether it would have affected the result, I don't know. I mean, there were quite a lot of people calling for Philbin's head over the Saturday and Sunday anyway. So you know, if the Dolphins had won, would Philbin still be around?
Yes.
Yeah. Could have been entirely different.
Yeah, he'd still be around for sure. I mean, they're not going to fire him after a win, no matter how ugly it would have been or how last minute it would have been.
A change was needed. So if the Dolphins had won, Philbin might still be here. We might still be waiting just another week for something to happen. At least now we've got the bye week coming up. The Dolphins are starting to make some changes.
For sure. And let's talk about those changes. So just like last year when we got finished pummeling Oakland, they went and fired their coach.
They did, yeah. Dennis Allen was gone when the plane landed back in Oakland.
And they put in Sperano, of all people, which is interesting because he had the experience. He was offensive line coach there. Same thing happens for us. The plane touches down and pretty much Philbin gets fired. I had predicted that he would be fired after the 3-game road trip when we were probably going to be 1-8 or so. Obviously, they decided that they still feel like they could salvage the season as opposed to let's just make a change. I mean, I guess that's the difference that's happening now. If you fire him midway through the season past the midway point, it's let's show that we're serious and we know, let's just tell the fans, we know we need to make a change. Let's get a jump start on Black Monday and that coaching search. But the change they're making is to try and salvage the season.
Well, that's what they say, yeah. I mean, you could hear when Stephen Ross in his interview saying that he thought that this gives the best chance to actually still make the playoffs. You can't deny Dan Campbell's enthusiasm and the fire that he has. But whether the reality is that it's, you know, four games into the season, it's already too late to change sort of schemes and a mentality that sort of seems to be rotten within the team. Is it too late to change the likelihood? You know, history doesn't bode well. I heard it was still from 1961 when the last interim coach actually made the playoffs.
Wow. I tweeted out a few days ago, and because I kept on tweeting things like the word, I would keep tweeting things about the Dolphins and using the word unprecedented. This is unprecedented. That is unprecedented. That is like becoming the word for the Miami Dolphins in so many ways. How badly they're playing. It's unprecedented at this point to see a team have more than a 70% pass ratio. No team in the last 15 years has finished the season with an over 70% pass to run ratio. No team. Right now we're running about 72, 73, somewhere in there. The record, NFL record for lowest sacks in a season is Baltimore in 82. So we're going with the Colts, I believe, right? 11 in a season. Right now we have one through four games. Unprecedented for Miami to go and fire their coach, and even Ross, Mr. Loyalty, to go fire a coach this early in the season. Yet we're seeing it happen. So many unprecedented things. But my thing is, the reason I feel they're truly trying to salvage the season, and it's not just let's put in a mouthpiece and let's just try, is the fact that they did not fire Coyle right off the bat and just hand it to somebody else.
They are truly
trying to figure out the best possible scenario for each side of the ball to salvage the season. I'm not saying it's going to happen or that it's possible. I mean, the odds are so stacked against them, but I'll give them credit for at least trying and not just packing it in.
I think so too. I mean, it does have a different feel to it because you can see that on this team, there are pieces that nobody can give a sort of a single valid reason as to why you've got the likes of Sue and Wake and you've got one sack in four games. We've got players on the team who can actually play, and we've seen them play. They are proven players, and you've got to admit that there is this feeling amongst the staff who, you know, are still there. Dan Campbell's come in, and he's truly assessing the situation and looking to see what bits need to change, because there are players on the team who he knows them personally. He's been around the team, for 6 years.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't even realize that till the press conference, by the way. I thought he was brought in with the Philbin regime. I wouldn't have guessed he was a stayover from Sperano time.
And you've got to think that he knows the players, and he, having him been a former player as well, he will know what it takes. And he's got that fire that still is carrying over from his days as a tight end. And he's going to, you know, really try and get the team into gear.
Yeah, for sure. So I saw so much energy on Twitter after the Dan Campbell press conference, and I will admit that I too felt that same energy. I feel a little bit of a chance to redo it. Let's do it all over again. Almost like we're pushing the repeat button, or not the repeat button, but the rewind button and the do-over button, a mulligan. It's almost like we're getting a mulligan, but we're handicapped because we're 1-3, and you're going to have likely, you know, and the Patriots will be 3-0 and likely 4-0 by the end of week 5. And the Jets are 3-1. The Bills, I think, are 2-2. Am I correct on that? Yeah.
They are, yeah. I mean, for a team that's just fired its head coach, I couldn't believe how much sort of excitement and positivity there actually was on Twitter and things yesterday, especially from Dolphins fans who are notoriously down on the team when we're not playing well. But I think everybody was so happy to see Philbin gone, and everyone was still calling for Coyle to go. But, I mean, what a difference it makes. You get an interim coach, Dan Campbell comes in, does that press conference where you can feel the energy that he wants to get across with the team. He's convincing in saying he wants to make the team more aggressive, which is exactly what we've been lacking. And, you know, the fans are already sort of back on board. I think a lot of them have come to terms with the fact that, you know, we're not going to get as far as we thought we would when everybody had high hopes pre-season. But I think, you know, they're at least clinging on to the fact that something's going to change. He's promised a change in the culture in the locker room, a change in the culture of the team, getting them to play with an edge, playing on the edge of what is sort of allowed within the rules. And, you know, he came in today, first practice that he had with the players. He was running the Oklahoma drill, trying to get, you know, and that's going to get guys fired up. That's going to get them used to hitting each other hard and competing. Nobody wants to sort of lose in an Oklahoma drill. And that's going to get players sort of realizing that, you know, they've got to pick up their gear in practice and sort of really get to getting that aggression to take it into a game, because you can't just sort of have walkthroughs, constant walkthroughs and easy practices, and then try and flick a switch on Sunday and expect to beat a team that's built to bully you like the Bills were, you know, like the Jets have been. If we lost to the Jags, we barely beat the Redskins. It was clear that we just weren't playing with enough fire to actually get anywhere. And, you know, Dan Campbell's coming in, and instantly you can see the fans are clinging to it. They're appreciating the change.
Yeah, for sure. And as far as the Oklahoma drill, I mean, when it comes to practices in the NFL nowadays, since the new CBA, you only have so many bullets in the gun. You have 14 padded practices during a 17-week season. And, I mean, he comes out and he fires a bullet day one, because he knows that he has to do that. He really doesn't have an option, and I like that. Unfortunately, we're not in a situation back in the day where he can do two-a-days and run Oklahoma drill three times, you know, six times a week. It's just not realistic. It can't happen in today's NFL, but he went for it. He said he wasn't waiting. First practice, let's do this. Let's get physical. And I'm excited about it. First of all, I want to say I really, 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 really love Dan Campbell, and that's not Monday morning quarterbacking. I've loved him since Hard Knocks, year one of that administration, when I saw him on Hard Knocks and I saw the way he coached those players. I mean, the way he coached those players was such emotion and such fire. And I asked somebody, hey, can you find me this clip where he said, go effing block for him?
Yeah.
And Dave the Wave on Twitter there found it, which was nice of him, and I retweeted it, and that retweet caught fire. His tweet caught fire, and he's got like 300 tweets of that and 300 tweets of the other one where he's pushing Les Brown and he's pushing Agnew, showing, you know, be ready, they're going to jam you like this, and he's just pounding into him and pounding into him. You know, they're padded, he's not. He's just bashing them. He's like, be ready, get yourself ready, get yourself prepared. I mean, they picked the right guy for so many reasons, obviously. I did not envision, though, I will admit. I saw his name mentioned once. I didn't even give it a second look. I thought he was so inexperienced, they'd never do it. I figured it'd be Rizzy, and I was scared to death that a few of the writers I was going back and forth with on Twitter were going to be right, and it was going to be Laser. Although I was just pounding the desk, as they say, pounding the table, for it cannot be Laser. He is as much garbage as Kevin Coyle. Simply, I know that most people disagree with me on it, but I'm telling you right now, anybody that says he's respected in the organization, he's this, he's that, he is as bad, if not this year, worse than Kevin Coyle. I promise you that.
And, well, going back to that play calling in the Jets game, that's just proof of it. It was terrible. But I mean, yeah, last time I was on Ron, I'd said, you know, if Philbin is gone after the game and we need an interim coach, Dan Campbell would be the guy who I'd want to come in, because yeah, that energy that he brings. You know, exactly when you were talking about the clips from Hard Knocks, where he's getting the players fired up, and he's not afraid to be a coach. He wouldn't be afraid to be a coach that's going to go up and, you know, smash someone on the pads and tell them to get themselves together, because, you know, he knows what it takes to be a player. You know, nobody's going to sort of be intimidated by Joe Philbin, but that entire energy change for the team, you can tell. Players will respond to that, and that's why I think going in first practice Oklahoma drill is great, because with a new head coach sort of looking over everybody, analyzing what the problems are, looking to instill some more aggression into it, then, you know, if somebody's chickening out in an Oklahoma drill, somebody's getting constantly beaten, they're going to be shown up, and the head coach will be right there to see it, and it's not a head coach who's going to sort of look lightly on that at all.
And I just do want to say, and I'm just going to, just one more thing on the Laser thing. I went back and forth with Simon Clancy. I believe he's a writer for the BBC. He does cover the Dolphins.
Yeah,
And I went back and forth on him probably twice in two, and I know it's for 2 days pretty much, back and forth. He got very annoyed with me. I was, of course, never disrespectful, but I saw him tweet so many things that it started getting on my nerves about Laser this, or Laser that, and I just kept saying, no, 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 no. This is why, this is why, this is why. You know, he was trying to pretty much intimate that I don't know about football, without coming out and saying it. That's fine. You're closer than I'm closer. But I'm just telling you right now, certain people, not everybody, tells you things. Those people have agendas. I'm telling you, you're wrong about Laser. And I have to feel just a teeny bit vindicated. Had Laser been fired, I would have lit his Twitter up until he blocked me. I promise you that. But I had to feel a teeny bit vindicated that Laser, not only did he not get promoted to the head coaching job, but they promoted an offensive coach of his above him, and they brought in the first consultant slash, now they're calling him, as you said, an actual offensive assistant, the first offensive assistant. That all that happened to me just shows, sorry, Simon, respect you as a journalist, but I was right and you were wrong. It's just simple as that. Because if he was that respected in the organization and all that, I feel like he'd have been head coach. Now, you can go and say that, well, the reason it wouldn't happen is because the players this, the players that. Well, if he's respected, why would the players this and the players that? They wouldn't. Bottom line, he is garbage, just like Coyle is garbage. They should both be gone, in my opinion. But I think the Dolphins feel like if you just erase it and start over, you know, you're going to have issues there that's going to be worse than what you've got. So they're going to try and bring in, you know, consultants and assistants.
Well, I mean, you'd never be able to know how much of the incompetency of sort of Laser and Coyle has come and stemmed from Philbin. I mean, the fact that neither of them as yet have been outrightly sort of cut. I think I know Dan Campbell said today in his press conference that he hasn't yet made a decision on what's going to happen with Kevin Coyle. You know, he still could go by the time anybody listens to this podcast. But how much of the actual, that sort of, you know, the lack of enthusiasm comes from Philbin, that what they've done is, if they're keeping Laser and they're keeping Coyle, then at least they're bringing in consultants to stand beside them and sort of assess them as well, so that there'll be an extra source of information for Dan Campbell. But the fact that, exactly, I completely agree with you, the fact that you know, Lazo hasn't been promoted when, you know, there's a lot of people saying out there what an sort of offensive genius he is, what a really sort of inspiring leader he could be, then...
They're wrong. Not, I'm just telling you, they're all wrong on that.
Yeah, I mean, he's not exactly proven himself with the play calling on the field.
And I know that, and where me and Simon Clancy, and it's at SI Clancy, if anybody's interested, where me and him really went back and forth is he says the skill sets of a head coach aren't necessarily the skill sets of an offensive coordinator or a play caller. I will give you that. But in what world do we live in where the person who is doing their job sucks at it, so the solution is let's promote them because they have the skill level for the next job, even though they're sucking at what they're doing now? Absolutely, that does not exist in this world. That makes no sense whatsoever. So I'm just that argument to me was just silly coming from a respected journalist such as Simon, and I believe that he is a respected journalist. I do follow and pay attention to him, and I do listen to his information, and I appreciate that he tweeted back and forth me, and I thought that was nice of him, even though he was getting extremely annoyed with me and just kept saying, why don't you just not follow me anymore? And, you know, all that, I get that. That was a silly argument in my mind, very silly.
Well, I like Clancy a lot. He's on... one of the good NFL podcasts that's over here, a UK podcast, and he's a genuine Dolphins fan. So, I mean, as a Dolphins fan, he's going to have an opinion as well, as do you, as do I, as do all Dolphins fans that are out there, and they're going to, you know, have sort of different views on who should be promoted. So I think it's sort of clear that, from my perspective at least, that, you know, Lazor's one of the guys to blame in terms of how inefficient the Dolphins have been. And it's pretty clear that he, from my point of view, that he shouldn't have been promoted. And thankfully for me, he hasn't.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Okay, so let's go over a few different scenarios of how this season could play out. Now, if you look at our record, you know, obviously we struggle to match up against the Bills and the Jets.
Yeah.
I'm just going to assume we struggle to match up against the Patriots because they're on fire.
Do you think so?
Yes, they're on fire, and we are extremely struggling. I know normally we play them well. This year, I'm struggling to see that as of now. Beyond that, if you look at our schedule, I don't know that there's a team that really scares me because all those other teams are struggling so badly right now. They all have such issues on their team, from Baltimore to Indianapolis, you name it, they're struggling. What do you think the odds are? Let's just start easy. What do you think the odds are right now? We're 1-3 that Campbell gets in here and we could win a total of 6 or 7. Like, let's say we're 7-9. What are you seeing the odds of that?
Yeah. So, I mean, luckily we face some teams who have come out to start the season and they might not be in as bad a position as we are, in terms of the upheaval and the coaching staff and everything. But we do face some teams who we have a chance of beating. You look at teams like the Titans. We would have a chance if we came out with a bit more energy. Texans, they are a mess of a team. I mean, I can't sit here. None of us Dolphins fans can sit here and sort of point fingers at teams.
Yeah, we're a mess of a team too. We're a dumpster fire currently.
Absolutely. But looking at other dumpster fires as well, we could see that there are possibilities for victories there. The Eagles haven't looked really impressive. I mean, the Jets, when they played the Jets, they won, but they kind of shot themselves in the foot as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, and on the 6th of December, we're playing the Ravens. Last thing it was reported was Steve Smith's got some microfractures in his back, so who knows how long he's going to be out. So the Ravens don't really, and Breshad Perryman, their first-round draft pick, he's not been playing. He's got the PCL injury, which he's sustained in preseason, and the Ravens are really struggling on offense and defense as well. So that could be a potential. If we show some genuine improvement, then that would at least be a competitive game and give us a chance to win. And the Colts, I mean, surprisingly, the Colts haven't been playing up to speed as well. So I know there's still plenty of the season left, and we're looking that we can try and turn.
And Dallas too, because they're saying that, the first game that Tony Romo will be back might be our game.
Reports on that were sort of looking at 4 to 6 weeks and 6 to 8 weeks, anything between 4 and 12 weeks. It's I don't think anybody really knows at the moment, but there are opportunities there if we show genuine improvement that we could at least be competitive in some games and give us a chance to win. But whether we can actually pull back to win sort of you know, go 7-5 to actually try and get to 500 at the end of the season. It's going to be a huge challenge, absolutely huge challenge. I mean, we've given up two, you know, technically home games to the Bills and the Jets already. We lost to the Jags. Those were supposed to be, you know, some of the easier games looking at the schedule when we first went into the season. Thankfully, looking at some of the later games, they now look a little bit easier. But again, those teams that we're facing later on, they're going to be looking to make some improvements too. And you can think they're certainly going to be looking at their rosters, at their schemes to think what changes they can make. The one that stands out to me in terms of when we, you know, really might be able to take advantage is that Texans game. But you know, we've got that bad luck where we've never beaten the Texans. October 25th, let's see what it brings.
Yeah, for sure. And then I go to the next expectation, or not expectation, but the next odds. A team that starts 1-3 only makes the playoffs 15% of the time.
Yeah.
And then you said only one interim coach has ever made the playoffs since 1961.
Yeah.
So that's before the Super Bowl era. Am I correct on that?
The stats don't look good, do they?
Yeah. So you mix those two. I just want to tell you, I'm very excited about Dan Campbell too. I'm very excited. But yeah. Number one, I refuse to ever be as excited as I was before a season starts or before we see what's really there. Like I was at the beginning of this season. And number two, I mean, you just kind of mix all that together. It's going to be tough for Dan Campbell. I'm excited for him that he's getting this chance and this opportunity. And I hope for him, and I'm separating myself as a Dolphins fan right now, that he has enough success that he can move on and go be at least maybe a coordinator or something somewhere, or an assistant coach, or that he'll get, you know, he'll get some shine out of this to where his coaching skills will show through for him. But the odds that he will come in and save the season and get us to 10 wins and get us to the playoffs are just so, they're so limited right now, right? What does he have to, am I doing it? Like, he has to go 9-3. Right? Am I doing that math correct? Yeah, to get to 10 wins. He has to go 9-3.
Absolutely.
Man, that's tough. It's not impossible, but it's tough.
Yes. And even 7-5 just to get us to 8-8. We don't get into playoffs then, but you know, that is even turning this season around from, you know, sort of an effort point of view, and an achievement point of view, you know, sitting at 1-3, if we can get claw it back to 8-8, then, you know, that is a turnaround, and it would show that Dan Campbell you know, does potentially have what it takes to be a good coach. Whether he can pull this off or not, I don't know. But I mean, I'm sort of a little bit conflicted as to what's likely to happen with Dan Campbell sort of going into next year. And I know it's really early days to start thinking about that. But whether, you know, what Dan Campbell would have to show to actually be considered as a coach for next year. But I kind of think that if he does go 7-5, he's got a good chance of doing that, and you know, that would be a coach who's got a lot of energy, got a lot of enthusiasm, got the players' respect. I mean, you heard today in the post-practice press conferences, it was Jordan Cameron who said that that Dan Campbell has the players' respect. He's got every player in the locker room, he's got their attention. But part of me also kind of thinks, would Stephen Ross go for that? Stephen Ross, I always kind of think he's going to try and get the big name coach, and probably he's going to have a couple of failures along the way, and it's going to be a couple of embarrassing sort of, you know, weeks, months for the Dolphins when we fail to get them. But I kind of think that Stephen Ross is going to try and go out there and get a big name. But I think Dan Campbell, if he can get us to something like 7-5, he'd be a worthy consideration next year.
I will say this, I think a lot of it will be about record. You're obviously going to have to win. He's going to have to win a certain percentage of games. But we also cannot look like we've looked. Lethargic, slow starting, and disinterested. That is key, regardless of record. That is going to be key. At least look like you care. The players need to look like they care and they want to win. They need to look fired up and ready to play football. That will be key as well. But another big thing, though, something to consider is I won't say he got burned. We're not a great team right now. But Todd Bowles just came in, and he was an interim coach after Sperano. Obviously, it's a much shorter time of games than Dan Campbell's going to get. And he did pretty well. He turned the team around a little bit. And I think that might always happen a lot when you change coaching in any sport at any time. It just kind of happens sometimes. But I think he'll be more considerate of it than he was with Todd Bowles, considering that now that Todd Bowles is coaching the Jets and just pounded our brains in. I'm not saying it'll be his, you know, end all and be all and his, you know, make or break point for the decision. But it'll definitely, I think he'll give it more consideration if the team plays well, responds well, looks like they care, doesn't look lethargic, starts better. I mean, they showed some stats today, and I don't have the stat line in front of me, but I mean, we're pretty much getting trolled by the NFL today. I mean, we're getting laughed at. They keep showing stats about how the Dolphins fare against the last three quarterbacks, and then how those quarterbacks did against the other teams they played.
Yeah.
And how we're like last in pass offense and in rush offense, we're last in rush defense. We're just a joke right now statistically.
We are,
that's for
absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely.
I mean, and, a joke.
Yeah, and until we actually change, then we can't really sit here and just complain about being a laughingstock, because we are. That's exactly what we are.
All right, so the last thing I kind of want to talk about before we move on to the thing I really want to talk about, and that's the Tannehill comments and that whole reporting, is the fact that it just seemed pretty obvious, and they keep saying, we really don't want Kevin Coyle here, but he's still here. And I'm trying to figure out exactly why, and I'm just wondering is that, I mean, I've heard about them maybe trying to consider pulling in an outside coach, which, again, unprecedented. Let's just say that again. That's unprecedented. And they're going to have to come and learn our language. You're not going to teach 22, 23 players, you know, their language. So that's number one. And number two, who wants to come in into this situation? The likelihood of success is so limited, it's not going to help your career unless you're just desperate to get out there and get a paycheck. So yeah, I think that's tough. Those two things are tough right now, and I think that's part of why Kevin Coyle is still our defensive coordinator.
Yeah, it is. I mean, if you're looking at some internal candidates, you'd think that the Dolphins would look at somebody like Mark Duffner.
That seems to be the name being thrown around.
Which seems to be the name that's being thrown around, but on a similar note, they have approached Jim Schwartz, who turned it down. And then you can't blame him. You can't blame Jim Schwartz.
No, that's not a good situation to go into.
It's not a good situation going to. He's still got opportunities to come in and be, you know, potentially be considered for a head coaching job next year. They're, you know, trying to come in a quarter of the way through a season to a dumpster fire like Miami. Nobody's really going to sort of go into that with open arms. So you think if they're going to actually put anyone internally, it would be somebody like Mark Duffner, or they'll do exactly what they've done on offense and they'll keep Kevin Coyle, but they'll bring in somebody experienced as a sort of senior defensive assistant to stand alongside him and analyze where he's going wrong and possibly have say over him to Dan Campbell if.
I think that's what it is. That's what it is. That way you get the responsibility of the job, so the credit can go to you if you do well. But if it doesn't do well, your name's not on it. And I think that's what's going on with Saunders. And that,
yeah.
And really, in essence, I'm going to say that Al Sanders is he's the offensive coordinator now, and really Lazor's his assistant.
I'm sure
Lazor's there to kind of teach him the terminology and everything. But I wonder who's going to be. I'm really, 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 really curious who will be doing the play calling on the offensive side when we play Tennessee. And on the defensive side, I think it's likely. You're right. They're probably going to try and find another guy like that. I don't know if Parcells kind of gets involved and tries to find somebody. I mean, between Parcells, which I know he still has a little bit of a touch with Ross, and maybe guys that Jim Harbaugh knows, because you know him and Ross are close, and guys that Tan. I mean, between those three guys, you tell me they can't find somebody respectable to come in and at least play that quote-unquote assistant, I'm really the coordinator, but my name's not on it, guy to take over this defense, because pretty much, again, today, like you said, Campbell said, we don't know what we're doing yet with Kevin Coyle. In other words, like, you don't want him here. So you're just waiting to get the right situation without firing him and before having your ducks in a row. Bottom line.
Yeah, it's not a vote of confidence to say that you're still not decided what you're doing with them, is it? And I think that's exactly, as you said, it's kind of, with Lazor there, I wonder who's going to be calling the plays on the field. And I imagine that Lazor's probably there primarily to be overseeing the scheme and making sure that everybody's still talking the same language in terms of scheme. And I wouldn't be surprised if they do that with defense as well. So, you know, if the news comes out that Dan Campbell says, right, we're keeping Kevin Coyle, I wouldn't be completely disheartened, because they might bring in somebody who's going to be actually sort of there to oversee what Kevin Coyle's doing and criticize and make sure that where the players aren't on the same page as Kevin Coyle, that that whichever consultant comes in has sort of the final say and sort of acts as that link between the players and Kevin Coyle, which is clearly missing, and causing them to play like they are, come out so flat on defense. I mean, I've never seen a Dolphins defense as bad as that's been playing on the field the past few weeks. and, you know, with the players, the caliber of players that are actually on the team, it's just, it blows your mind.
It definitely blows your mind. I heard some talk today on 560 QAM Big O show. He's a dogger of many things, Dolphins right now, especially including Hickey, including his draft picks, including Tannehill. I mean, you name it. You know, the front office Tannenbaum. I mean, he's trashing it all right now. I guess assume rightfully so, but he keeps there talking about who are these rookies and these second year guys from Hickey that have done anything. They're all doing nothing. He's bad, they're bad. Well, but here's where I'm going to pump the brakes. If we were getting the play we were supposed to get from the stars, the Pro Bowlers, the top 40 voted in the NFL guys that are on our team right now, three top 40 voted in the NFL just on our defense alone. If those guys were playing like they were supposed to, but the first and second year guys were not, I'd buy it. But right now, 53 guys are not playing the way they're supposed to play. 53. Yeah. That is systemic, and that is more than just, I mean, you can't really judge it right now because you can't see it. The whole team is all playing so poorly. You got Pro Bowlers playing barely average. You got guys that were average and ascending playing below average. You've got rookies playing like they're college kids. I mean, it's crazy right now. I mean, it's insane. And right now it's, we're seeing with the way we're playing is the result of that play. So I'm not ready to sit there and judge Hickey and his picks yet. That's my opinion. I know others will beg to differ, but it's too clouded right now with the way all the players, including some of the best in the league, Sue, you know, Wake, Grimes. I mean, Grimes is playing average. Well, I understand that Wake's hurt, but he's playing below average. He's nowhere to be found. OV's on a contract year. He's been ascending his entire career. He has disappeared. I mean, let's face it. Lamar Miller, 1,100 yard back last year, is nowhere to be found. And most of that is the play calling and not running the ball. But even when he runs the ball, he hasn't looked as effective. I mean, you name it. I wouldn't even say Pouncey looks all that great. I mean, I'm not an offensive line guru or anything, but really, I mean, who is playing good on this team right now?
Nobody. I mean, there's such a massive disconnect between the players and the coaches. And that you wouldn't be in this position if there wasn't. And it's not even just the head coach. You know, that's why it's filtering down to all the assistants as well. There's something which is just at its core completely off key in Miami. And you know, Ross seems to think that there's a chance that it'll be fixed. As we've said, whether it actually can be this season, we don't know. But you know, at least they're trying something, and they're trying it fairly early in the season. But they, you know, like I say, having these star players on the teams who are doing nothing. I mean, you know, look at that D-line, look at all the stars that are on there, and the only sack that we have is from Jordan Phillips, the rookie.
Who hasn't even been active, at least one game, right?
Exactly, and we can't get any pressure. I mean, and even when we do get pressure, there were opportunities in that Jets game, just to go back to it. You know, Ryan Fitzpatrick, who isn't known for being one of the most mobile quarterbacks, he just managed to avoid pressure and run on a key plays. I think he sort of racked up about 34 yards or something at key plays of the game when we had their offense stopped, and he managed to get past with his legs. And you know, we're supposed to be one of those D lines that just absolutely stuffs the run. You know, nobody can run through Sue. Ivory was bouncing off him all over that game. It's just there's something so wrong. Like I said before, it's like the players have forgotten how to play football, and we know that can't be the case. You've got these players who have played football pretty much all their lives. They've been in the league for a number of years, and the skill is still there, but the scheme, their enthusiasm, their connect with the coaches, their drive to play, everything from that is just missing.
I mean, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah,
there's just no doubt. But I will say this in closing this portion of the show and before we start the next portion. When we go, and I wish we were playing this Sunday. I'm glad for the team. They get the extra time. Obviously, they got a lot to sort out. But I'm getting, you know, excited to see what the team looks like against Tennessee. I will not lie. Now, I don't have the enthusiasm of what it'll be like for the season like I did before our season started. But I am excited to see what it looks like. It is like a kind of a new lease on life for at least temporarily as a Dolphins fan right now. I don't know if you feel the same way.
I do, and it's weird because I don't think we should be sat here, you know, being excited about this team. But I think the excitement for the change, I think, is what it is, what is there, and what's actually keeping us going. And definitely, I want to watch the team play. But you know, we've got quite a few injuries. I think today Grimes said he wasn't sure if he was going to play. You know, game 5, week 6 against the Titans. with that knee injury. Thankfully, it wasn't a sort of season-ending injury. It's a knee sprain. But I want to see them play. But we also need, there's going to be a period of sort of getting to grips with the new style. I do think that there will be an instant sort of uplift to the team. The players are going to come in. They'll know that they're being watched. They'll know that everything's being judged from top to bottom. They'll have the respect of Dan Campbell, and it'll be a mutual respect between them. You know, with Dan Campbell being an ex-player, they'll have that connect sort of historically of what it actually takes to get anywhere. So which I think is, you know, something that was completely missing with Philbin, but I think there will be that change, and it's exciting. Yeah, it's exciting to actually see that something could happen. I mean, we have to sort of temper our expectations of what we can achieve in the season, but I think just anything positive at this stage is good news for Dolphins fans.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. All right, man, let's transition to the elephant in the room right now, and that's the reports of the Tannehill comments to the not necessarily the practice squad, but the scout, I guess the scout team, if you will, which is mostly made up of a lot of practice squad guys and some of the guys that are probably on the lower end on the totem pole of the roster. So it was reported that he said, "Enjoy your practice squad trophy," right after the defense, specifically McCain and others, were running full speed in a half speed walkthrough and intercepting his passes. I mean, that's the thing there that the reporters, for one, try and fool us. If you watch Hard Knocks, you know that what a walkthrough is. It is literally, you know, their watches are on, their sneakers are on, their shirts are out, and they're truly just walking through the scheme of the play. They got a scout team for to play against the defense. You got a scout team that plays against the offense.
Yeah.
And they're just kind of walking out the script of the game. That is absolutely bottom line. At half speed, no one's supposed to be running full speed. No one's supposed to be doing any of that stuff. Of course, they'll try and fool us by making us think, for those who don't know, that Tannehill got pissy because he picked off some passes. That is so misreported, number one. You know, yeah, did he get pissy of it? Well, probably, because they aren't doing what they're supposed to do. They're just goofing off, which shows you the amount of control they have of that team, because they're not doing their job and what they're supposed to do in that situation. If it's just practice, you know, the midweek practice, it's supposed to be going full speed, and we get it. If he throws picks, he throws picks. He has nobody to be pissy about but himself. You understand what I mean? But in this situation, nice try, reporters. At least you're not fooling me, and anybody that here is listening, go ahead and check it out. I'm promising you I'm right when it comes to what a walkthrough is. That's number one.
I agree. Yeah, I mean, you know, it just shows people trying to throw fuel on the fire. You know, Miami, everybody, it becomes the easy target just to make fun of. And I think this isn't even a story, you know, if it's any other team, but it's because it's Miami, people are going to run with it. Now, I fully agree. A walkthrough is exactly what it is. It's a walkthrough. So basically make sure you know what the plays are going to be. You get some looks from the scout team and essentially make sure you don't get hurt for the game tomorrow. That's what the walkthrough is. So, I mean, yeah, if the scout team's picking off Tannehill's passes, then, you know, they, in the first place, they shouldn't be. Tannehill shouldn't be throwing those passes anyway. But, you know, if it does happen, then, you know, at least it shows that there's some fire. But you hear comments like that, way worse than that, on Hard Knocks. You know, you hear the sort of rivalries between offensive, defensive players on the Texans this year. People are insulting each other all over the place. Now, I think Tannehill actually came out and admitted to saying,
enjoy your practice squad trophies, guys.
Practice squad trophy.
He admitted saying that.
But I don't mind that. That doesn't bother me personally. I mean, it shows a little bit of banter, a little bit of back and forth between offensive and defensive players. But, you know, that isn't a derogatory comment to make.
And nobody said that. You know, even the other side that is reporting this didn't say that was the comments that made him mad. They said it was enjoy your practice squad checks.
Exactly. And that made them mad. There's a huge difference between those. Because, you know, insulting somebody's paycheck is been paid $100 million pretty much, is bad. And, you know, he's come out today and said that that's just not true. Exactly not what happened. And Pouncey's there backing him up. It's
That's where we're getting to it right now. That it wasn't true. That's the problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it wasn't true. It's BS. It's a bunch of crap. I don't know. It came, what you said, from a Houston beat reporter for whatever reason. I don't know how he originally reported this. That's why Jeff Darlington from the NFL is saying, NFL Network is saying, it likely came from an agent just based off the source alone, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've been following it, the sort of what's been happening throughout the past couple of days. And, you know, people sort of seem to instantly react to it. And then you've got reporters out there who you can trust, you are in the know, guys like Jeff Darlington, who actually come on and just pump the brakes a bit and say, look, guys, kind of think where this is coming from. Think of it actually in context. You know, going back, looking at a guy like Tannehill, would he make comments like that? I mean, you know, somebody could make comments if they get a bit pissy in practice like that, but that's not what Tannehill was about. And you have to sort of wait for both sides to have a say in it. So you have to look at the sources of the information, see where it's coming from. And yeah, it gets blown out of proportion because people have that immediate reaction to it. Everyone's looking to sort of throw more fuel on the fire in Miami. But when you actually kind of look at it from a more sensible approach, then there's some clear holes in where this information is coming from.
There's huge holes in it. So let's start with the fact that so far it said multiple reports said, and the report I originally read was Omar Kelly's, of course, because it seems like every single time there's something negative about our quarterback, it's always somehow coming from him somewhere. And I understand he's not the only reporter that said it. I get that. But he said multiple sources. Of course, they're not going to tell us what those sources are. But all of a sudden now we see players are willing to stand up and said, no, I was there. Sorry, Tannehill never said that. But
yeah, not a single player.
Not a single player is saying that he said it. Not one. Not even one that says no comment or I choose not to respond. Nothing. Yeah. Nothing. It's all a bunch of crap, okay? And I get that. I think that some of the reporters, except, of course, for our boy Omar Kelly, are starting to back off of it. You know, and they're starting to say, okay, we reported that, but that may not have been true. I can't get confirmation from players. We've heard that reporters say that they can't get confirmation from players, but we sure as heck don't see Omar Kelly backing off of it, do we? Of course, because when it comes to trash in Tannehill, that is that man's full-time job right now. I'm just so sick of him. It's ridiculous. He knows what a volatile situation we have right now in Miami. He knows that spreading that crap only makes it worse. He knows it's a distraction. He knows it. And from what I was told, that when he absolutely said, I did not, and whoever slandered me, you know, he used the word slander, I saw on Twitter, but I cannot say it did not come from a reporter. So, of course, you know, take it as you will, that Tannehill looked right at Omar Kelly when he said it. I don't know if that's true or not, but man, I hope that it was. But I of course, not there, so I can't confirm that.
No, we can't. But, I mean, I've been following the story as it's gone on for the past couple of days, but I kind of was waiting for players to respond, for Tannehill to respond, have an opportunity to respond before really looking at it, and because you can't put that much stock in it. You know, when you've got a dumpster fire burning as much as we have with the coaching situation, you know, everybody likes to sort of throw more fuel on it, and so it's whenever you've got this old whirlwind, it's going to pick up all these extra stories, and people are going to take them. They're going to run with them. The trophy comment, that's nothing.
That's nothing. Every player is saying throughout the league, reporters, that doesn't mean. That's just talk. That's just talking smack. That's all that
is. But as soon as somebody's got that, they're going to take it out of proportion. They're going to add things onto it. They're going to talk about sort of making the team look to be even worse than it is, which it's not difficult to do, and people are going to jump on that opportunity. But you do have to look at the sources and so see where the information is coming from before you sort of jump to any snap judgment. So, you know, Tannehill's had an opportunity to respond. We'll see what comes of it. But, you know, we've got bigger problems in Miami at the moment.
And I like that he used the word slander, that it was slanderous, which is very true.
Yeah, he seems he did seem genuinely sort of put out by it. He said, I was just reading the quote here. It says, yeah, I'm upset. It's slanderous to report things that I didn't say to degrade my reputation. It's sickening to me. And that came through from Tannehill through Jeff Darlington. And, you know, Jeff Darlington's been there sort of fighting his corner for the past couple of days.
And I'm so glad he had one national person doing that. I'm very glad. That Jeff Darlington is just pretty much sticking his neck out on the line and just saying it's not true. And why would Jeff say all that if he didn't feel 100% that it wasn't?
Yeah. I mean, if players came out, some of the defensive players, and, you know, all these players have had opportunities to say something, and every single one of them that's been questioned on it so far has said it's been absolute crap. He didn't say it. But, you know, if they had said no comment, as you said, or...
Yeah, pleading the fifth would have just shown us that, okay.
Exactly.
Yeah, not one person even hinted, not even a look, not even like the Sue look. You know what I mean? Like, nothing.
Tannehill had come out and said, I said some comments to my teammates. I've apologized. We're moving on from it. That would have been sort of the end of it as well. But it's clear that he's put out by these allegations, and it's just people kind of stirring the pot in Miami.
Yeah, it's just unbelievable. So what I did, and I probably about, 15, 20 minutes, maybe half hour, and I don't know if you were on Twitter about before we started the show, I tweeted Tom Garfinkel, the CEO, yep. And I don't know if you saw the tweets, and I did it as I tried to be as irrational and articulate, as rational and articulate as I could be, stating that I just feel like a message should be sent to those who actually ran with the story that their their press passes should be revoked for at least a game or two. I just feel like that's fair. And I know somebody has to have the power to be able to do that. Now, someone direct messaged me, and I won't say who it was, but a person who writes for a site direct messaged me and just said, "Hey, Ron, I see what you want to do, but that's not really how it works." And that's pretty much all they said, that pretty much I was barking up the wrong tree. That's fine. I'm sure I am. And my voice is small. No doubt about that. I don't have thousands of listeners. I have hundreds of listeners, but I don't have thousands of listeners. No doubt about that. My voice is small, but I know somebody somewhere in that organization saw those tweets. I asked others, please tweet this guy. I saw that some others did. Maybe even more did that didn't mention me in their tweet. They just tweeted him directly. I have no idea. I didn't look back through every single tweet to see once I did that. And I'm sure nothing will come of it. I'm sure that they won't pull their press passes. Probably worse has been said. But I hate having to continuously talk about Omar Kelly. I get on this rant about it for a while, and then I'm able to leave it alone for a while. But then he says or does something else that just gets me fired up. I said after the Marino comments, I noticed that he was all about Ryan Tannehill. And I've said, and I'm on record for saying on the show and on Twitter, I didn't believe that he believes that. I think it's crap, and I think he was kissing South Florida's butt because of those Marino comments that he made a couple months ago. But the second things turned, oh, did he flip the script back on Tannehill, which just goes to prove, just goes to show that, of course, I was correct. He never believed any of those positive things. He was just trying to kiss South Florida's butt because of the Marino comments. Bottom line, instead of backtracking from those, he'll just kiss some Tannehill butt and all will be good with the world. But he flipped the switch so quickly. You can't actually sit there and tell me he really all of a sudden believed that Tannehill was the answer, because he doesn't believe that, period, in a story. For whatever reason, he's got like a vendetta against this guy or something. I don't know what it is, but it's ridiculous. And ever since Miko entered the picture, which she's gone now, that's for sure, it just got 10 times worse.
I mean, you look at loads of different sources, look at loads of different reporters, and you do kind of get a feel that some reporters have agendas. They have their own sort of opinions, and whether that's as fans or just because they feel that they're around the team and sort of above all the rest of the fans' opinions, that's up to them. But you know, if you look at different sources and kind of think and gauge your own opinion and build your own opinion, and that's, you can see how much attention you actually want to give to those others. But you know, it's like people just want to put more fuel on the fire here, because it's an easy target. And until we actually show them otherwise, then it's going to be like that. But I can't tell you the number of sort of references I've heard over the past few days just to, you know, digging up old crap that comes out of Miami, like people going, oh, and this is the team that had the Bullygate scandal with Richie Incognito. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's been so much information that's come out even from that sort of you know, about Jonathan Martin's willingness to play in the NFL and things, that it's kind of put things a little bit more into perspective, and who here wouldn't be wanting Incognito sort of back on the O-line in Miami? I'm sure there's going to be a hell of a lot of people that are going to sort of would love to have him back in Miami on the team.
Oh, yeah. I mean, right now, out of that situation, one is currently playing in the NFL and the other is not.
Absolutely. And it's just kind of, people like to dig up these stories. They like to take whatever opportunity they can to have a dig at the Dolphins. And we're a laughingstock at the moment, and we need to get that turned around.
The question is, you know, like how do you turn that around? Winning. That's it.
Exactly. By winning.
That's the only way you can do it. So what are your expectations for the Tennessee game? And, you know, we won't get super deep into it, but what are you thinking? What do you really truly feel or guess you're going to see?
I think we will see a team that comes out with a noticeable more energy. That's if Dan Campbell hasn't got everybody injured in practice in the next couple
of weeks. Nice.
but I think you will actually be able to see it. I have no doubt that we're going to come out on with a lot more energy, a lot more enthusiasm for the game, and just really come out firing. And I think running the ball, a more balanced attack, is exactly where it's going to go. I can't see us coming out and doing the same, you know, the short little passes, two-yard passes, just time and time again without actually getting to run the ball. So, I mean, I know that the talent is limited on the O-line. There's a limit to how much we're actually going to be able to improve and improve protection, improve the running game, open up running lanes. But I think you're going to see a hell of a lot more effort coming out of this team. Whether that actually can translate in terms of, you know, without changing the schemes, without sort of changing, perhaps what needs to change is, you know, a complete reinstall of a defensive scheme, of an offensive scheme. I think we'll see the best of what we can actually get in terms of effort, and whether that translates to a win, it's possible. Go back to the cliche, any given Sunday, it could happen. And I think that the talent is there on the team, with a bit more fire behind it, it could achieve a result. It could achieve some results, yeah.
I hope that we can get this win, because if we are actually going to somehow turn this around, we need this win against Tennessee. I mean, we pretty much have to have it. It's a true desperation moment. I mean, we know that it was a must-win game for the Dolphins, but it was more a must-win game for the Philbin as much as it was for the Dolphins. This is an absolutely, positively 100% must-win for this organization.
So is the game against the Texans. If we can get back to 500, get back to 3-3, you know, it gives people confidence. It gives the team a bit of momentum. It gives them a bit of faith into whatever changes have happened that are starting to take place. And it's not going to be a quick turnaround. I can't see that it's going to be sort of, you know, come out a week in a couple of weeks and that we have, you know, come out looking like the most efficient team on offense, and Sue and Wake get, you know, 10 sacks combined. I don't see that happening at all, but I think you'll be able to see small improvements, and they may become cumulative as the season goes on, and we can, you know, look like a mediocre team towards the end of the season, but at least a competitive team, at least a team that's not going to come out looking completely flatlined, as we have done for the past 4 weeks. And that's the most gutting thing about it. That's the most sort of frustrating thing is, it wasn't even really the losses. It's the way we lost. We just looked
The way the team looked looked like the worst team in the NFL.
And I think that look is what's going to change. But whether there's enough time to sort of get all the players back on board and to the game plans and all the execution, because it just looks like the team hasn't played all preseason, hasn't done anything in the off season. They've just kind of turned up every Sunday and just hoped for the best, and it's not worked out. But I think they will come out with more energy. They will look different.
I mean, we've scored three, and this was one of the graphics I saw today. We've scored 3 points, I believe, total in the first quarter.
Yeah, we've been outscored 37-3 in the first quarter so far.
That's a sad number.
It is. I mean, there's no way that you're going to be able to win games constantly coming from behind, like falling behind. You know, what was it this week? I think it was we were 20 zip down, I think, before. And we actually scored, was it?
40, something like that.
Something like 16-0 or something before we actually even managed to put any points on the board. And it, constantly coming back from that.
We were down 27, nothing at halftime against the Bills.
Yeah, yeah. And then you have to resort to just slinging the ball downfield. But, you know, even in this game, we're down sort of, it's third and 10, third and 15, penalties, whatever, sacks. And we're just doing off these little dump passes left and right to either Landry or Jennings. And it was such a poor game plan. You're never going to be able to convert those. Landry, yeah, he has that. He has the ability and he's got the fight in him to get those yards. But, you know, defenders are going to be aware of it and they're going to close in hard on Landry. And there's no way you're going to convert sort of third and 20. I mean, this game we were 0-12 on third downs. We were 0-3 or 0-4 on fourth downs. It was, something's got to change in terms of actually execution and game plan in terms of being able to convert those. You're going nowhere fast.
Yeah, and it just seems to me like I can't believe that all of a sudden Tannehill just fell off the face of the map and this is the real Tannehill. Just don't believe. That's one thing I don't believe. I'm sorry. No, I don't care what anybody else says. I don't believe that.
Yeah, it's the whole team had given up on what appears to have been Philbin and also, you know, the concerns with Laser and with Coyle. There's such a huge disconnect between the players and the staff, and I think taking Philbin out of the equation, at least it gets one part out of the way, and Campbell is definitely focusing on offensive and defensive coordinators and what the game plan's going to be.
I'd love to be a fly on the wall right now in some of those coaches'
meetings. Oh, I'd love to.
No, just to be in those coaches' meetings right now, and while Campbell's talking to him, I'd love to just how I wonder how Laser feels about, you know, this guy, his tight ends coach.
Yeah,
he's got to be. All of a sudden, he is now the head coach, and we got to listen to him. It was the competitive nature of most players and coaches too. You cannot kid yourself that even Philbin has a competitive nature. Yes, he is not boisterous about it, but I'm sure it's eating him up alive what has happened right now, regardless that he has some money sitting in the bank. People think that makes everything better. Not for these guys. That's why they are where they are. But that's just got to eat you alive to sit there and listen to that and know that not only that, but you're coaching for your job. You got to perform or your new boss who you were the boss of 5 days ago is going to fire you.
Yeah,
I mean that's crazy. Those are such unreal situations that you don't see in everyday life.
Yeah. Even last year before we gave Philbin the contract extension to come back as coach, people were saying there was already talk about who would be a possible candidate to replace him. Laser was one of those names that kept popping up as, you know, the potential guy because he'd already brought out those improvements in Tannehill, who was still playing behind a rubbish O line and didn't even have the pass catches he's got this year. And people were thinking what a sort of revelation Bill Laser has been to the team, and they were considering him. You know, his name was being put around there for consideration for a head coach, but then we gave the extension to Philbin, and you know, this year Laser seems to be as much to blame as pretty much anybody else. But I think it's a good thing that he obviously think it's a good thing that he wasn't sort of put forward for the interim coach, and it's going to be quite sort of degrading for him, thinking that, you know, the tight ends coach is now, he's got to answer to him, and you know, this is a guy with fire who's probably not going to take much crap from him. So I'm looking forward to seeing what happens, but with tempered expectations, I think.
I wonder, and in another place I'd love to be a fly on the wall, and when Stephen Ross, probably Ross, Tannenbaum, maybe Hickey, Ponte, some others, some of the decision makers of the operations side, were in a meeting trying to decide once they, well, and of course before they fired Philbin, they probably already knew who they wanted. They'd had that conversation as soon as after they decided, before Philbin maybe even knew that he was getting fired, they made their decision they were going to fire him. So they're sitting there and they're mulling through all their options at head coach. And I wonder who got real consideration. Was it close? Did Rizzi, you know, from our special teams coach, was he even a consideration? Because I know he was talked about a lot, but Was laser a consideration, or were they just like, heck no, from the beginning? You got to assume coil definitely was not a consideration. I think that's pretty obvious. I'm just really, was John Benton the offensive line coach a consideration, even though the performance at O-line is, I mean, they had to, it's weird, they had to pick a coach from a unit that seemed like it was performing at a decent level compared to the rest of the team, and their options were pretty limited, let's face it.
I think they obviously didn't pick Laser, and there's got to have been some concerns with management about Laser's performance as well. And I think they hear that from the fans, and I wouldn't be entirely surprised if there was some connection between players and the coaches, players and management. Now, I think, you know, someone like Ross has got a, he's got a big sort of affinity for Tannehill. I think he's, I wouldn't be surprised if there was a conversation between some of the players and some of the management somewhere along the line as to who has got the respect of the locker room, because it was clear that Philbin hasn't. Coyle hasn't. You can feel the tension whenever Sue is interviewed and he's standing there at a press conference. None of the defensive players can actually say it out loud. They couldn't do before that where the problems actually lied, but you could tell that they were there. There was some real tension between them and Coyle. And I wouldn't have been surprised if the same existed on the offense as well. And, you know, Tannehill or some of the offensive players could have had that sort of link with management, with Stephen Ross, to say, look, the guys who have the respect of the locker room are, you know, first and foremost, probably Dan Campbell. Dan Campbell's got the fire to actually sort of instigate some change in here.
This just did pop in my head. I only saw one tweet about it today.
Yeah.
Something about Zach Taylor, the quarterback's coach, being demoted. Did you see anything about that? Do you know anything about that? And I apologize for the listeners that I did not research that before I came on the show.
I didn't see anything like that. I can't remember off the top of my head, but I think there was, I know that there was the wide receivers coach has now, I think, been promoted, to some position, and somebody else was going to move into the wide receiver coach. But, you know, without that information in front of me, I'd just be sort of making it up, to be honest.
I just think that's interesting if that's the case, because it's been reported that Zach Taylor and Tannehill were, like, very close friends. So
they were, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. I'll look into that more. I'll tweet out what I can find. Probably somebody who's listening already knows.
Yeah, I'm sure.
What else do you see from this change as far as, Let's say the first game, let's say we lose and look the same. Okay, I mean it's a possibility. I mean we're all thinking, what's the fan reaction going to be to that? Is it and like right now the coordinators still remain the same. We don't know that by the time we play that'll be the case. I think it's fairly certain, at least figuratively, Laser is still the title of offensive coordinator. We don't know where Coyle will be, but let's say he is and we look the same. I mean, what then? We pretty much know probably what the fan reaction will be, but what will the Dolphins' reaction be if that happens? If we just come out and get blown, it's 21-0 first quarter kind of crap again.
I think if that happens, then what we're going to hear is look, it takes the time to make these changes. It's going to be the same sort of media sort of speak where it's going to just be non-information, but just kind of putting fans off at bay, trying to keep that fire down as much as possible. But in all honesty, I cannot see that the players don't respond to this change. Even if the result is the same, we're getting blown out, you know, schematically, I don't think that we come out looking as flatlined, as sort of unenthusiastic in the next game against Tennessee. I can't see that happening. If it does, then, like I say, I guess we're going to hear just interviews of, you know, we'll get this turned around. But I think it just means that end of the season, there's going to be a full reset.
It is so cool though to get to go to see that Tennessee game again with a new pair of eyes again. I mean, this will be my third pair of eyes I'm watching the game with. This is honestly that I had the pair of eyes I was watching the first and maybe second game with.
Yeah.
Then I had the pair of new eyes that I realized, okay, well, we know what this team is. I mean, we know what this team isn't anyway at that point. I didn't know going into Buffalo what we were, but I certainly knew what we weren't. So I kind of, you know, reset expectations. We could still win 10 games, make the playoffs. It's just not going to look like I had hoped, like we were going to just be world beaters. Then all of a sudden now I get to go again with a whole new wondering about this team. Wondering. I have no idea what they're going to look like when we play Tennessee.
It's, it's not a case of going and watching the team and sort of, you know, with your hand in front of your face thinking, oh my God, how bad are they going to be? I think what it'll be now is looking and seeing what changes can we see that they're coming out with now that, you know, from where they have been the past 4 weeks. So it won't be a case of looking for all of the problems that are still there. It's going to be a case of looking for what improvements, if any, have there been, and, you know, looking for a little glimmer of hope somewhere along the line.
So what's going on with the Fin Troopers, man? Like all that fun excitement. What are you guys going to be up to for the rest of the season?
Well, the rest of the season, we'll be doing a couple of parties around London. So like, we'll be sending out some information about those as well. But then we're going to be taking it on the road. So when we go to the States, we're going to be going out to New York for the rematch. Sort of, I think it's 29th of November at MetLife. So we'll be packing up all the stuff and taking it out there with us and joining the Dolphins NYC guys and partying out there. So, you know, it'd be great if the Dolphins, you know, we could go and see the Dolphins every week and we could do the same thing week in, week out.
That's a lot of partying, though.
That's a lot of partying.
As you say that word partying a lot, I'm really wanting to know. I think some people are now wanting to know. You use that word partying both shows several times. So what kind of partying are we talking about here?
Well, it's kind of fan parties and NFL parties. So the when they show the games here, so they do a lot of the games in casinos and places around London. So we get try and get the fans together where there are going to be fans, and we kind of just, you know, we go and it's enjoying the game. I think it's a slightly different atmosphere as it is over there, because, you know, you've got fans from all over the place, so it's not going to be the same as going to you know, a local bar and down in Miami where you've got us all packed with Dolphins fans. But it's just good opportunities to sort of get and meet with fans, sort of, you know, support the NFL and be watching the games. It's a lot of fun, but yeah, definitely looking forward to taking it on the road to New York.
Are we sucking down some brewskis right during these parties?
There was a lot. We did quite a few interviews over the weekend and they were getting progressively more and more drunk as the day went on. So it is a lot of fun, but it's all about enjoying the game, enjoying the NFL, enjoying you know, being around that crowd, guys who love the game. And, you know, it's a shame that we couldn't sort of be a bit more supportive and the game fell flat very early on. But it was, like I say, this weekend was absolutely fantastic, and we'll be taking that on the road with us. Yeah.
That sounds like a whole lot. Sounds like a lot of fun. I think I'm trying to decide whether I will, be doing a broadcast for the Tennessee game or not. It's an away game, but I haven't decided. I went solo on it last time for the Rabble.TV. I went solo on it last time. It was very difficult. Luckily, I had some people Skype in. That was definitely helpful. But 3.5 hours doing, you know, commentary, kind of play-by-play on your own is tough, especially for an amateur like me, because I'm definitely not a professional at it. But I'm thinking that I might end up doing it if I can find a tag team partner to do it with for the Tennessee game. That'll be fun. But if not, I think I'm just going to have some beers ready. And in case it goes really bad, I'm going to pop them open quick.
Yeah, just start early on. Keep drinking and just go with the show. It'll be fine.
Yeah, for sure. Anything else you want to maybe talk about your Twitter handle there for a second before we wrap it up?
I'll push that. That's at Fin Troopers on Twitter and Instagram. You'll see some good pictures and stuff from videos from the weekend. So if you're interested in checking out some of the pictures of us with the ex-Dolphins, pictures of the parties and things, then definitely check those out. And catch us on Twitter if you ever want to sort of get in touch and you're up for a bit of Dolphins chat, then we're certainly getting involved. And you'll find us on there, no problem, at Fin Troopers.
All right, great, great. And that's F-I-N Troopers.
F-I-N-T-R-O-O-P-E-R-S.
All right, as for me, of course, I am Ron. Best way to reach me is on Twitter, because that's where I live, at UnsquishTheFish. And if you do want to send me an email, it's unsquishthefish@gmail.com. Sometimes I go on some rants, so for warning, if you haven't seen me on Twitter, every now and then I do like to rant about the team. And of course, right now a lot of people's aggravation are high, but then our excitement is now high again, so let's see what happens. Everybody, thanks for listening. I really appreciate it, and have a great day.